Coming of Age, celebrating 20 years of sin.
We're on this trip down memory lane and it's non-linear.
Non-chronological.
It's not chronological. And we've got Tess Lawley on the line. Tess was the general manager of Sin, I want to say from 2014-ish. Hi, Tess.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
All the way from Toronto, Canada.
Tell us where you are and where you've just been, Tess.
So right now I'm at home and where I live is Toronto in Canada, and it's Saturday night here in Canada. So obviously I went to the hockey game because what else would you do in winter? But then I went to the hockey game and you go with a few other Australians and New Zealanders and people you know in Toronto, and one of them was a Sin alumni. And then we went to the pub afterwards.
This is mind-blowing stuff.
And that was coincidental, right? It wasn't by design.
This is completely coincidental. I didn't know this person. So Andrew Peterson, who was at Sin in your time, Joe,
yes,
and remembers you and asked me to say hello and congratulate you on your career as general manager.
Oh, thank you. Look, Peter, if you're listening, I love you. It's been a long time.
This is further evidence, though, isn't it, that sinners are everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't. Maybe every second person is a sinner.
and it's because, as we all remember fondly, and this is something I spruik all the time when I'm any chance I get to advocate for Sin, even beyond, it's not really part of my day job anymore, but the enforced turnover to make sure youth can participate, to make sure the shows turn over, that A, to keep it young, and B, just to give other people a chance. The beautiful benefit of that is that Sin has engaged so many people.
Yeah.
There's just such a huge alumni cohort.
Yeah.
We're everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, as evidenced by Tess showing up to the hockey in Toronto and finding another person.
Yeah.
If you did some quick calculations, actually, say 1,000 people per year, and that doesn't include all the schools on air kids, which I'm told is currently 3,500 per year.
Through the excursion program.
Through the program, the education and training program that Sin runs very successfully. So, look, if you round it up to 5,000 people a year times 20 years, that's a lot of people.
So, Tully, it sounds like you're about to write a new grant.
Well, maybe I will. I'm inspired.
This is what we did. Quick, do back of the envelope, chuck it in the grant, see what happens.
So, Tess, you wrote a few grants, I'm sure, in your time. Tell us about your time at Sin in general.
Your Sin story, Tess. Where did it start?
Oh, I mean, it's tough to reflect on your life and realize you peaked before you turned 26. But, we all just go through it if we were at Sin, don't we? it was one of the best periods of my life I think I'll ever have. I started as a volunteer. A classic Sin story. I said, I'm just going to go to Sin and I'm going to take all their resources and take all the opportunities and then I'm out of here. I'm going to get a job in commercial radio or I'm going to go to the ABC and be really successful. And of course, I went into Sin for a volunteer shift and I just never left for
until you were kicked out.
Yeah, until I was politely asked, could you please make space for another young person?
I don't remember there being anything polite about the when you turned 26. I remember it just being fact. You're a 26 now. You can see out your block on air and off you go.
And, of course, people call you Sin Dead. So it's people will openly to your face tell you how old you are and how dead you are now.
That happened after my time, that extremely morbid terminology of Sin Dead.
We embraced it. Yeah,
wow.
We owned it. It was a positive. It wasn't a negative thing. It was off you go into the world, fly free.
I feel like some people struggled with that, though. I think because Sin's, when you're there and you're a part of it, it's so much, your friendship group or your interest, and then suddenly to not really be involved anymore all of a sudden, I think there are definitely some folks that really struggle with letting go of that and understood philosophically and culturally why that was important for the organisation, didn't argue with it, but then also what now? Mm. And exactly as Tess is saying, in terms of you feel like you peak early, when you're given so much responsibility so young and then you're out into the world, where do you fit? It's kind of tricky.
Tess, did you – this might give me a little moment to talk about our connections across other community broadcasting stations in Melbourne, because there are – what are there, 9 broad stations on air in Melbourne?
10?
10 now. Goodness. 10. a lot.
Depends what you count.
But Tess, you too, like those of us around the behind the mics in the studio, had connections that you grew from Triple R and other stations, right? You were on the field at the Community Cup for a number of years there, playing for the Megahertz, the community broadcasting station.
That's actually probably when I peaked. One time I took a mark in Community Cup. That was a highlight of my life. The beauty of SYN is that, like, everyone in the community broadcasting sector in Melbourne and also in Australia loves SYN, right? So, you know, maybe if you're on Triple R for a few years, you don't really talk to the people in PBS or whatever like that. But if you're a SYNer, like, the door is open for you to come in and kind of volunteer at all these different places. And I think I went into that quite deep. So I did on-air stuff at Triple R. I also did, like, just behind the scenes, like, office volunteering at Triple R. Mm. I did some similar stuff at PBS and was on the board at PBS.
Oh, were you?
I also for 4 years and did some programming stuff, which was, like, you know, just another great community to be a part of and to kind of, you know, hold a role in. And then I also sat on the board of the CBAA, the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.
Same, high five.
Same,
Talia and Joe.
Yes.
Yeah. Nice.
But it was one of the best experiences I've ever had.
Tess, I'll send you a photo of this, Tess, but I brought my little SYN memorabilia box today and I've got in front of me the CBAA board induction kit from 2008. So the Community Broadcasting Association peak body, this very thorough induction kit. I think it was
the youth rep.
They had young position for anyway.
Yeah,
they still do. Yep.
Wow, how great!
Sorry, continue, Tess.
Sorry, Tess.
We're just now George's leafing through the induction. Oh. You can't see this on air, but you know, some meaty
stuff.
As much
as I'd love to, I'm thrilled to hear there was an induction kit. I don't remember any sort of induction kit. Mm. You know what? I'm interested to hear from all of you what induction kit you got to actually being the GM of SYN.
Oh.
I personally got to take over from the wonderful Talia Azaria. So I got a 75-page document comprehensively covering every single thing I could possibly need to know, which Talia later told me she'd been working on for like just months, just putting kind of little tips and nuggets of gold and pearls of wisdom in. So I was very lucky. But what did you guys get when you sat in the chair?
I feel like, Tess, that induction booklet was probably more, that handover was more for me. Than it was for anybody else, It was about documenting. It was about getting it all out of my head so that I knew that at least I had done, you know, everything that I could. Because I feel like SYN is this place that you hold on to, you're so invested fully and it, you know, is all-consuming that you just by nature of that, a lot of that knowledge is then held in your mind. Mm. Because as with many organisations, you know, documentation is not always a strong point. Because when you're busy doing, it can be hard to kind of lay the crumbs, I suppose. So it was about laying the crumbs out as much to help me leave as it was to welcome you in, Tess, I think. But I'm glad it was helpful.
There was one... Oh, it was super helpful. And the most helpful tidbit of advice that you gave me, Talia, when I became the GM was reach out to the other GMs.
Yeah.
And like everyone was just like, in hindsight, I think so incredibly generous that there was sort of like five or eight people in the world who I could ring up with no notice, no context, nothing, and say, hi, I've got a problem. It's A, B, and C and blah, 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 and I'm not quite sure what to do. And that person would just generously give me half an hour, an hour of their time. Like when I stepped into the role, I had coffee with all of you, actually, and other general managers to just, like, kind of piece together this, like, history of SYN. And it's, like, I agree with you, Talia. It's, like, challenging to run an organisation where a lot is held in the people. Mm. But if the people are so tied together and kind of – the way we're all sort of, you know, brought together and stitched into this community of SYN, you still have access to them. So the knowledge never really leaves in a way, which I found incredibly helpful.
It gets vague over time.
Oh, was it this person or that person? Was it that backup track or this one?
You also have to cop the unsolicited advice from us too, right? Like, oh, this is the thing that I always wanted to do. I'm going to get Tess to do it. No.
Well, Tess, you'll be pleased to hear that I'm having coffee with Ruby Smith, the new Sin GM this week.
On you, Jo. So
I love that.
We're
going to
have dinner, aren't we? We're going to
organise a dinner. Yep. Sorry, Tess, you're not invited.
Oh, no.
You can come from Toronto.
I'm going to invite myself. Zoom, call me in.
Oh, we will.
I've got my pearls of wisdom ready to go.
We will.
I don't really. That was big talk.
No, I liked it.
Tess, before we let you go, what was your most proud moment during your time at Sin?
Oh,
that's a hard question.
It is, because there's a lot. So I actually think one of my most proud moments, and I won't go into the details, but there was lots of moments as general manager where I sort of comforted or helped individuals who were like going through a bit of a tough time, because I think like most of our staff and volunteers were in their late teens, early 20s, and it's like quite a interesting time for your identity and how your view of the world and that kind of thing. And so I remember having a lot of quite heartfelt D&M conversations with volunteers and staff. Mm. And it makes me really proud, because then when I kind of, I don't know, I'm sure you've spoken about this a bit, you like grow up a lot in your time at Sin.
Yep.
And I think Sin helped me grow into a very caring person, of like individuals and communities and that kind of thing. So when I think about those moments where I was able to like help someone turn their day around, I'm like, oh, that was really special. There was also awesome grants and awesome shows and all this like big stuff that happened for the community. But I also think the little moments between individuals were really important to me.
And I think collectively, though, as well, like if you think about, so it's not just those conversations, which I'm sure, Tess, were invaluable, but the actual opportunity and for those young people that were involved and had Sin as their outlet and their interest and their community, that belonging that is created by being a part of something and being accepted for who you are and that welcoming nature that Sin has as its culture actually life-saving. So I think for folks that are doing a radio show, they might not be involved. They might not have ever spoken to the general manager, right? But the opportunity is really, really powerful, and that impact that has on individuals' lives as they're broadcasting, and for people tuning in who then feel not quite so alone in their experience of the world as well.
Or what they're into.
Yeah.
Some of the niche content, like we were just reflecting, we had this show ran for ages about Formula One, video games. I mean, Asian Pop Night started here and has since gone on to some other broadcasters who've taken that format as well. Fantastic.
The Naughty Rude Show.
Sex and Relationship Show, which really was just an honest and very authentic.
Talking about all that stuff that you were taught you're probably not supposed to talk about.
Yeah, queerness, you know, different cultural backgrounds, just really capturing that. I remember the school shows where, like, it was pretty rough and ready, like, do a bit of prep, come on, and I'd be, this is when I was training manager, like, the mics are on, this is for you. And just to look on some of those students' faces where it was like, usually they're told to shut up in the classroom, right?
Yeah, yeah.
For good reasons, respect for the teachers and, you know, learning, different. But the learning that they were doing in here was that their voice mattered.
Yeah.
And that what they had to say was important, and there was an audience for them. And
for some, having that first time of having to actually articulate what it is that they want to say.
Yeah. Within two, and this is, again, sounds like I'm writing a grant, but the point of difference was it was within a value set.
Yep.
Within some constraints around, you know, this is a part of civil society. There's a whole lot of structures around us. We had to adhere to broadcast laws. We had to adhere to, you know, there were some ground rules, right, to make this a safe space and to be a positive contributor to the media landscape. And that was a safe set of structures, but also a heap of freedom within that. Mm. And it was what continues to make it unique, I think, as distinct from, like YouTube or, you know, podcasts. People, I know there's a lot of overlap with what Sin does there, but there is a difference when it's a community-owned structure.
Right. That was always the argument. Will young people going into the future want to come back to a place like this because they can just sit in their bedrooms, can't they, and do it alone. But the difference here is that you have the community and you find your people, and often you haven't. I had that experience too, you know, grew up with people I felt like never really understood me or I didn't understand them, and then I found Sin and found the people that I identified with and, you know, made a life out of it, as so many people have. And that's the difference. I don't think you can get that just from broadcasting from your bedroom. Although maybe you can. I don't know. I'm old now, so what do I know?
This was our about experience. Technology.
This was our experience.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tess, what a joy to have you direct from Toronto.
Thanks for having
hockey.
Me. Are we going to write a grant? Because I'm ready. Just listening to you guys, so I'm ready. I'll put my hand up. I'll jump in. All right.
Maybe we just transcribe. Maybe we get the. Get the show off the logs and we'll just transcribe what's being discussed here.
Joe's having coffee with Ruby, the current general manager this week. You let us know what Ruby needs. She might be just like, dudes, chill out. I got this. Which, yes,
and
she really has.
Yeah,
yeah. Thank you, Tess.
Next up, Tamin.
Thank you so much for having me.
Are you enjoying
and
the Aussie...
Happy
Aussie...
birthday, Sin.
Oh, happy birthday, Sin. And I hope you're enjoying the Aussie tunes, Tess, all that way over there. We're going to hear from Tame Impala now. Stay tuned.
Coming of age, celebrating 20 years of Sin.